Senate Bill 494, we have taken that off the calendar for today, for any of those of you with that interest. And we're going to be moving around a little bit to accommodate the senator's schedules. That's what we're doing now. So we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 543. Welcome, Senator Morissette and Lee and Bob. First of all, Mark, would you like to tell us what Senate Bill 543 does?
Senator Corcoran, members of the committee, Senate Bill 543 requires legislative fiscal officer to provide human services impact statement for measures introduced in legislative assembly. It requires the Department of Human Services to provide information requested by the legislative fiscal officer.
Thank you. Gentlemen, who'd like to go first?
I will. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill Morissette, 348 G Street, Springfield. I'm a state senator from District 6, and I would like to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 543, which I introduced. 543. Lee Hazelwood, on whose behalf I introduced this bill, will speak in a moment. Over the weekend, I took home this impact statement of the various cuts that we voted on this morning, and lo and behold, it had an impact reduction statement, which I think kind of verifies the fact or lends credence to what we're asking for. I think it is good public policy if we put impact statements when we make cuts, and I think it's equally good policy to put an impact statement down when we add revenue to various programs. I learned something from Senator Minnis in our Health Policy Committee. In fact, he argued strongly for a policy committee to take a look at these issues before we pass laws. What is the policy? What should the policy of the state of Oregon be in regards to various social programs? And I think if we look at policy statements as we construct a bill and talk about impacts that we might have on the population for adding revenue, I think that would certainly help people understand why we're doing this. So I think this is a great idea, and because of the tough times we're going through at the present time, it certainly has been used to explain to people what the impact is of the cut. So I think this is something that we should do. We should add to the statute and do for either cuts or bills to add new revenue. So with that, I will stop and turn it over to either Bob Castagna or Lee Hazelwood.
We're going to have a change in plans, gentlemen. We're going to close the public hearing on 543 for about 5-10 minutes to allow Senator Decker to get his bill, because he has to be up to Portland probably for a baseball game. So with that, I will open public hearing on this would be Senate Bill 548. Could you tell us what the bill does, Mark, please? I've got Mark Scurrian here. You passed it already. There you go.
Senator Corcoran, members of the committee, Senate Bill 548 requires the Executive Department to sell all gasoline storage tanks owned by the Executive Department. It allows the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to purchase up to 5% of those tanks in rural areas of the state. It directs departments to enter into contracts with non-retail fuel dispensing facilities to allow state employees to fuel state motor vehicles.
Thank you very much, and we are just honored to have the illustrious senator from Beaverton here. Senator Decker, tell us what you're doing, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to keep this probably within 2 minutes, actually. The first pitch is at 4, so I'm going to just bus up there to get there by 4 o'clock.
Is this at that perfectly good park that we already have in Portland called PGE Park, or is this at the new park?
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 548 really does a couple things. It came out of Senate Bill 60, which Senator Starr might remember. We serve on transportation together. And a bill came, and it was actually a very good idea that at least brought this issue to light for us. The idea was that we should have consistency in terms of all the state gas and county and city and community colleges and higher ed gas facilities. But it brought up the immediate question to myself is, why do we have all of these facilities? And so what I've done, and this is a work in progress, but this issue now resides in this committee, is what I've done is I've met with many of the players, and I think they might want to chime in on this effort. But what we're looking to do right now is try to get better efficiencies. This bill would basically privatize with some exceptions and allow a certain percentage in the director of DAS to exempt out a certain number of these facilities. My hunch is on this bill is that we probably have more gas facilities than the state needs, and there are probably a few in some areas where we could close or eliminate. And what we've decided to do is use ODOT, and Doug Tindell, I think, is doing main work on this, but we've been working with Rod from the Motor Pool and Dugan Petty from DAS, is use ODOT, who has most of these gas facilities, use them to go out and first do research of, at their facilities, how many other ones are there within a 20 or 30 mile radius, and then to go out to those facilities and ask them just the question, if we have one, do you need to have one? And it could be, my hunch is a lot of these are outside state purview. They are either community colleges, a higher ed, a city, a county. But we're trying to do some due diligence to find out just how many of these gas facilities are out there, and are there efficiencies to be had. And this vehicle, if we do need state legislation, I think could be a vehicle to achieve that. And how it got assigned to this committee, not transportation, we're not sure, but it now resides with y'all.
Well, Mr. Senator Deckert, the question I would have is, to whom would you presume these would be sold?
I don't know that we would sell them, although I think we have some folks from the Independent Petroleum Marketers Association who actually would have a very interesting perspective on whether there's a market for them. A lot of these are in areas, I think my hunch would be the first ones you should go for are ones that are in urban, suburban, more populated areas, because then you have you probably have a lot of private folks that could supply the gas to the state or city or county or whomever's cars. But I'm not sure that you would always want to sell. But the big question, I think, for us would be, do you want to have this many gas facilities and all the costs that are embedded in maintaining? You certainly don't person these facilities, but all the embedded costs that you have in terms of maintaining and restocking and all those, are there efficiencies to be had in this area? I think there might be. But I think our work group should be able to get answers back to this committee on that.
Other questions? Seeing none, thanks, Senator Deckert. Have a good trip. I hope you don't strike out. Cliff Olson, OPMA. Welcome, Mr. Olson.
Thank you. Chairman and committee, my name is Cliff Olson. I represent the Oregon Petroleum Marketers Association. I'm employed locally here by Mark Nelson Oil Products. I wanted to appear today in case there's any questions that you might have in response to Senator Deckert's bill, and beyond that, I would have no testimony. I'd just be open for questions.
Okay, well, it's my assumption, Senator Deckert, that you're going to have, in essence, a work group on this, and if you come up with a product, you'll come back to us for a work session on this.
Yeah, I'm not interested in the question you asked.
I guess the concern I always have in these kind of instances of privatizing is I'm very concerned that once the state loses its capacity to purchase petroleum at its costs and pass it on to the state agencies, what's to prohibit a private sector business from essentially holding the state hostage on costs for the gas for their vehicles?
In most cases, you would have a number of different suppliers within a given area. For instance, within Salem, you would have a number of, you have a couple of card lock options. You have a number of retail options that use fleet cards and so forth. Yeah, you could still tie it to a contract of a certain amount, as they do now for the motor pools. They purchase at a contract amount over a benchmark such as the Opus average. You could tie a contract to that same type of basis so that you would have an ongoing situation. There would be some instances, I suspect, where there may be a diminished number of suppliers in some of the rural areas, but chances are those are the people that are already supplying those tanks in that area anyway. So you would be just switching the facility, and it would get the state out of the having to maintain the tanks and deal with DEQ issues and spill issues and all those liabilities.
Well, Mr. Olson, it begs the question, too, of if these are redundant facilities in urban areas, why would there be any incentive to purchase these?
Oh, for the industry to purchase those sites? That, I doubt if that would happen in most cases. They would probably be decommissioned, I would imagine, would be the most expedient and the best cost savings for the state.
So they wouldn't be sold. It says requires DAS to sell them. The purpose is not really to sell them. The purpose is to decommission them.
I don't know that would be the case. That would be one option. Of course, the equipment and everything that's on site could be sold if the location was such that it would lend itself to a key lock or card lock facility. It certainly would be of interest to industry to continue that. There are a number of marketers that do have facilities in that type of a program where they have a facility that's a captive site, so to speak, that's operated for a certain group of people. And in that case, of course, the liability issue and everything goes to private industry rather than the state.
And do you think, just one follow-up question is, do you think there's a liability issue for the state having to decommission these facilities without a buyer?
Liability in terms of the liability exists one way or the other, whether they decommission or not, because that would be as far as contamination so is concerned. So you're liable for contamination removal whether it exists now or in a facility that no longer existed. So it has to be cleaned up one way or the other. So the liability would be the same in that respect. You would just be ending it at that point rather than it continuing on.
Okay. Thanks. Further questions?
Is DAS here?
Is DAS here? There, DAS is here. Yes. Would you like to talk to them, Senator Menes?
I think so.
You want to just stay up here, Mr. Olson, and have DAS come up here?
Sure.
Looks like you're about to be surrounded.
If it's happening. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dugan Petty. I'm the Deputy Administrator with the Procurement, Fleet, and Surplus Services Division of the Department of Administrative Services, and with me is our State Fleet Manager, Rod Lohan.
Welcome. Did you want to respond to Senator Minister?
Well, I'm trying to figure out what advantage this would be to the state if we have facilities. I'm trying to figure out what the dynamic is here. We own, I assume, X number of tanks, and testified to that we may decommission them, we may sell them, there may not be a market for them, we may have continued liabilities. Frankly, I'm not sure what in the world we think we're trying to do.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Minnis, we have surveyed and found that we have 165 tanks throughout the state. That's at least what our information is telling us right now. And we suspect that each of those tanks has a little different story to them in terms of what they're adjacent to. If they're in rural Oregon, there may not be anything in the neighborhood, including a card lock facility. Many of ODOT's tanks certainly fall into that category, and there may not be a buyer and may not be much of an alternative for them to fuel at a card lock facility. The other end of the spectrum, we have, as Senator Deckert mentioned, in urban areas, we in our own operation have two 20,000 gallon tanks, one in Portland and one here in Salem, that we fuel our motor pool vehicles at the end of their return. And we would certainly be willing to look at that to see if there are other tanks in the area where there are redundancies and if there are more cost-effective ways of operating than what we currently are. So I think what we're about in terms of the task group is trying to take a look at these tanks, understand if there are any efficiencies to be gained by decommissioning or selling or leasing those, and try to gather that information and come back to the committee.
Senator Minnis, so, sir, why does the bill say shall sell and shall enter? Why wouldn't it be may sell and may enter into contracts?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Minnis, I think this bill, if Senator Deckert could be here, he would tell you that this probably was kind of a first broad brush bill to address the issue, and I think he would be the first to say that there probably are some changes that would need to be made to this bill.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, folks, very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to testify on this bill? Close public hearing on Senate Bill 548, and we will reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 543. And for anybody that came in late, we are not going to take any action on Senate Bill 494, if you're here for that. Now, where were we, Lee?
We were discussing the weather, I remember, right, in the closing tank someplace, but I don't know whether Iraq or wherever. But, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Lee Hazelwood. For over 20 years, I've been an advocate for seniors and people with disability. Senate Bill 543 is a bill that's long overdue. I actually was working on a similar bill prior to the 95-97 session when a young, personable legislator from the Cottage Grove area listened to my idea and introduced House Bill 2807, which is similar to this bill today. Since 1985, the Department of Human Services has a long-term care survival priority list 1 through 17. As you are well aware, due to budget restrictions, what happens to these people when they're being cut out of service, as thousands are today? The cuts are not only dollars, but they affect people's lives, and the ripple effect is enormous. And the unintended consequences impacting the quality of life for these people being cut out. I'll ask for your support for this bill. Please pass the bill, and thank you. And any questions?
Thank you, Lee. Any questions of Lee?
Just one.
Yes, Senator Walker.
Who was that young, personable legislator from Cottage Grove?
It was before your time, Senator.
he was a young, very personable thing. Some of us have aged since then.
I've never
point.
Seen such
Thank
serious
you.
Backing up. Senator Minnis.
Just a general question. I'm generally supportive of the concept. On line 22 of the bill, it says the number of individuals who are harmed by the effect of the measure. It seems to me that harmed has kind of an implication. It's a legal implication that someone has a potential tort or some cause of action or something of that nature. And I guess I would prefer words like adversely impacted.
I'd be happy to change anything you want to change.
Here, but I guess what we're really trying to do is make an assessment of what the impact of the reduction or the new program has on certain populations without giving any kind of an indication that we want to be sued over it. Not that we wouldn't be, but...
I think that's a very good point, Senator. I mean, I would add, Senator, that the concern I would have is I'd like to get a physical analysis of this as well, and then we can look at it with that information at hand.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. The only other concern I would have about the bill is currently we have to wait for fiscal impacts, and we have to wait for what was the other impact? There's one other one. So we're currently waiting for a lot of stuff and a lot of analysis that in the heat of a session, it's very hard to get it all compiled before you actually begin to move bills. So.
Well, I think this one, Senator Minnis, only costs $49,999. So we're safe.
I hear what you're saying, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of Lee? Seeing none, we have Mr. Bob Castagna, the Oregon Catholic Conference.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bob Castagna representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. We think Senate Bill 543 is a good idea. And to expedite the process for generating a human impact statement, we would suggest that this become part of the fiscal routine and their analysis of bills, and that DHS become a part of that so that it just becomes part of the way in which bills are analyzed. We think in large measure most of that information is there. It may not just be on paper. So we would support this bill and say amen to it.
Bob, I guess I'd pose a question to you, and that is line 19, that it would talk about the number of individuals affected by a measure, taking out Senator Minnis' concern for harm, just you could say adversely affected or whatever. Doesn't that get done to some degree now in the discussions over caseload impacts of measures?
Mr. Chair, yes, and as I indicated, most of this information is available already. It may not be on that same fiscal analysis report that accompanies a bill, so I think the information is there. It's locating it in one site for everybody to review when they're looking at either the fiscal impact or the revenue impact of a bill. It would just carry the human impact with it. I don't think it's going to be burdensome at all.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Mr. Castagna? Nope, all set. Thank you, gentlemen. Anybody else wishing to testify on this bill? We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 543 and we'll go into a work session on House Bill 2192. Modifies the duties of the program director of the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. We've had this bill before us before, and I believe we have amendments. Mark, would you like to tell us what the amendments do?
Senator Corcoran, members of the committee, the effect of the amendments on this bill is to replace the word service with the word stewardship at five different places in the bill. This would eliminate any perceived inference of inaccurate labeling of a participant as being involved in community service programs, which might imply a court-mandated activity and not the alternative school program that the Corps is.
Colleagues, are you recollecting this and remembering this bill? Didn't we?
Yes, we did.
We moved it conceptually, and I got it conceptually removed back to me by Judy Hall.
Judy Hall doesn't run this place.
There's a good point there. Did you hear that, Judy? So can we run this out again?
No, actually.
You want to wait? Talk to Judy?
No, we've had this conversation before.
Yes.
Actually, what I'd like to do is drive the legislature back to where we were 15 years ago, where we actually do legislating, as opposed to letting other individuals in the building jack us around and tell us what we're supposed to do, what we're not supposed to do.
Senator Minnis moves the bill as amended to the floor, moves the amendment. No, actually, we have to do a
Senator Courtney,
dog and
Mr.
pony.
Chairman, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2192.
Senator Minnis moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2192. Is there any objection to suspending the rules? Motion carries and the rules have been suspended. Rules suspension take two-thirds of those approved appointed to the committee. Recognize Senator Minnis.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the -1 amendment. Is that what it is?
I move that we reconsider the vote.
Oh, okay. Yes, okay. I move that we reconsider the vote by which we unanimously, conceptually, amended House Bill 2192.
And sent to the floor with a due pass
right.
As amended recommendation.
Senator, yes, sir.
I move that we reconsider that. Senator Minnis moves that we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2192 was amended and sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
To my motion, Mr. Chair.
To your motion.
Again, I'll state for the record that I object to this, the Secretary of the Senate stopping a bill that I believe is lawfully and parliamentarily adhere to, because it is within the purview of a committee to suspend the rules and conceptually amend a bill notwithstanding.
Your objection is noted.
In fact, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that if there's an objection regarding the work of a legislative committee, that objection should come from a member and not the Secretary of the Senate.
Good point. Mm-hmm. So noted. Ms. Gravel, would you read the... Senator Walker?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, I just came from my Business and Labor Committee, and Greg Chamoff, Legislative Counsel, was in there and shook his head quite violently when we tried to attempt to make a conceptual amendment in that committee. So I don't think that the direction comes directly from the Secretary of the Senate.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
I would have ferociously taken Mr. Chamoff to task, and I would do so publicly.
All right, well.
So noted.
And my final question, if I might.
Yes.
I was absent on this day, the only day I've been absent this session, so I don't. Did we have any testimony in opposition to this bill?
We did not. We spent, I think the primary testimony was clarifying what the intent of the bill was. I had some questions about prevailing wage law and what their intention was in this bill, not to expand the prevailing wage law considerations. And then the reason for this amendment was simply the note of community service sounded like a court-ordered sentence, so they changed it to stewardship. And what caused the little surge here is that we conceptually amended that, and then the bill came back magically, which I agree with Senator Menace, everything he said, and he's the grizzled veteran. So,
Mr. Chairman, I sense I'm going to have a rule change on the desk, and then I'll do this in the future.
I have a feeling that may happen. Now, Ms. Gravel, would you please call the roll?
Yes. Senator Scott?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Minnis?
Reluctantly.
Aye. Okay. So, we have modified House Bill 2192, and it's going to the floor with the amended with a due pass recommendation.
Yep.
Is there any volunteers to carry it? It won't be Senator Menace, believe me.
Have we done this?
I carried it before.
Okay. Senator Starr will carry. Thank you very much.
We've adopted you.
I think you're ahead of us.
Oh, really? Oh, excuse me. Okay. We are back in work session on House Bill. It's tough to get rookies here. Okay.
I move the adoption of the -1 amendment to House Bill 2192.
Senator Menace moves the adoption of the amendments to House Bill 2192. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And then I need one more motion.
Senator, hit the gavel here. Bang. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move that House Bill 2192 is amended to send to the Senate over the due pass recommendation.
Senator Menace is doing what I thought about a long time ago, which was moving this bill as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor. Any objection? Okay. Do we need to do a roll call?
No.
Okay. It's moved. Senator Starr is carried. Thank you. We'll end the work session on House Bill 2192, and we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 478. Thank you.
Did you say grizzly?
Grizzly and grizzled. I said both, just to cover myself. Okay, would you like to explain what Senate Bill 478 does, please, Mr. Ellsworth?
Chair Corcoran, members of the committee, Senate Bill 478 changes the name of the Office of Energy to State Department of Energy, changes the name of the Administrator of Office of Energy to Director of State Department of Energy, changes name of Office of Energy account to State Department of Energy account, changes name of Oregon Hanford Waste Board to Oregon Hanford Cleanup Board.
Aye.
This sounds like a naked power grab. Mr. Graney, come up and explain yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Mike Graney, Director of the Oregon Office of Energy. And this bill came to us initially from the request from the Hanford Waste Board, both to change its own name to reflect its focus on cleanup, and also while not changing any of our authorities or responsibilities, give us a little more standing in dealing with the Federal Department of Energy and the agencies from the state of Washington involved in Hanford that are departments. There would also be other benefits in terms of dealing with other federal agencies and agencies from other states. That is all the bill does. Would not have a fiscal impact statement. We would use up all our stationery and things like that before ordering anything new if the bill passes.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 478.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Menas.
478. I move Senate Bill 478 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation, unamended.
Senator Menas moves Senate Bill 478 to the floor with a due pass unamended with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to conceptually amend the amendment.
Senator Menas just coughed. Any objection? Any discussion? Seeing none, so ordered. And is there any volunteers? Okay. Senator Menas will carry this. Thank you very much, and we are adjourned.
Thank you very much.